Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nedarim Daf Chof. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to Option 2. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn to the Mishnah at the top of Daf Chof, we notice some markings. They're explained on the side under our Nosei Mivneh heading. Nosei, the topic, Mivneh, structural note, combined to one. The double underlining represents Dugmois, Shel, Nidorim. These are a series of examples of vowels. Im Pirushehen Lohokel. Following each one, you will find the elaboration or the explanation of the individual that results in the vow not being binding. The Mishnah. Nodar Becherem. He used the Cherem expression that we've seen already in the past. Rashi at the top gives the example, Chefet ze Cherem Olai. He refers to a specific article, regards it as a cherem. It let it be a cherem upon me. And then he continues to explain as we continue in the Mishnah, V'omar lo nadarti ela becheremo shel yam. When I made the vow, my using the word cherem, my intention was to compare the article, whatever it is, might be a book, might be a utensil, might be some food. I'm comparing it to a cherem shel yam. What's cherem shel yam? Nets that are used to catch fish. In other words, cherem, though, as we've seen in the past, is a term that has a vow connotation, but it also has other interpretations, other explanations. For example, cherem shel yam, nets used to catch fish at the sea, which of course in this context means that the vow that he made is meaningless. He was comparing the article that would have been prohibited by the vow to fish nets. The korban, he vowed by saying such and such article, whatever example you should choose, is like a korban unto me. Now a korban, if left unexplained, would mean a sacrifice, an animal sanctified, dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash, which would be something forbidden. However, the Omar, and he goes on to explain, lo nadarti ela bekorbonos shel melochim. In this context, the word korbonos means gifts. Gifts given to heads of state. Gifts given to kings. So the vow doesn't even get started. He's saying that the book or the bread or whatever is unto me like a gift given to a king. Harei atzmi korbon. Person uses that expression. V'yomar, then he explains. Lo nadarti ela be'etzem shinachti li liyos noyder bo. When I said atzmi, I was referring to a bone in Hebrew, an etzem, a bone that I left in my closet for vow-making purposes. Essentially, something that's meaningless. So a person who speaks like that and says that he, hare atzmi korban, and then made reference to that his intention was to refer to a bone that he left for vowing purposes, it doesn't get started. Rashi says, If we would have left this uninterpreted, it would sound like he's sanctifying himself. I vowed in a bone that I left for vowing purposes. I wasn't referring to myself, literally. Another example. Koinim ishti nenisli. He made a vow using the konom expression. Again, a kinui for korban. This is what we've seen in the past. And if left uninterpreted, so he's saying that he's forbidding himself from benefiting from his wife. However, he then explains, V'yomar lo nadarti elo Ishti harishona shigirashti. When I made a reference to my wife, I was referring to my first wife that I've already divorced. So, with that interpretation, his own wife, his current wife, is totally allowed. Al kulon ein nisholon lahem. Regarding any of these, all of these examples, there is no need to seek out absolution. In other words, this would imply that there is no vow whatsoever. Now the Mishnah goes on to say things that the Gemara will have to explain. It's very unclear at this point. The Mishnah goes on to say, "V'im nishalu," and if the speaker sought out absolution, "Onshin oisoi umachmirin olav divar bimer," then we impose a penalty upon him and we are strict with him. This is Rebbe Meir's opinion. V'chachomim omer poisel lo pesach mimokim acher. We absolve him from the vow through his expression of regret, and we implore upon him to desist from such practices, from treating vows in such a light, offhanded fashion. And that's what the Mishnah means when it says, we train him, we instruct him not to be so lightheaded with regard to vows. Ha gufa kashi. The Gemara points out that we have a seemingly inherent contradiction. And on the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei, the topic heading, Yishuv Stira. The object of the Gemara here is to resolve a seeming contradiction. Ha gufa kashi, but the real Mishnah, within the Mishnah, Shukatoni, it said, Ein nishalin, there's no need for absolution. Vahadar katoni, im nishalu, on shenoso, machmir alei. And then Mishnah goes on in the same breath, practically, to say, well, if they were sought out for absolution, we deal with him strictly. So now, the Gemara. Ha gufa kashi. The gufa means the Mishnah is inherently problematic. Amris, you say on the one hand, Einish Olin Alehen, which would imply that they are not subject to being absolved. The Rashi takes this to mean the chulon ein nishon de ein poislin posach the ein matirulem de kansinalu mishon de nidro mamish mashma. That approach suggests that such nidorim do not lend themselves to being undone, and we impose, let's say, harshness upon one who vowed thusly. That's Rashi's approach. The Tosfos has a totally opposite approach, and you could see this by looking in the Tosfos on the, let's see, the medium-sized lines under the Ran commentary. Omar Mar, Ein Nisholin Loshen Nidora Mishunehu Medisanya Ein Nisholin Mashma Demekil Stam Ein Srichim Shela, that we're very lenient, that they don't need any absolution. So now, having seen that, the expression Ein Nisholin Alein was taught in the Mishnah. Either extreme, either according to Rashi, there's no absolution whatsoever, and according to the Tosfos, it doesn't need to be absolved from the outset. And then v'hodar toni, and then the Mishnah says im nishalu oinshin oison umachmirin alein, that if they are absolved, Rashi says that's mashma that they are able to be absolved. In this regard, the Tosfos learns along the same lines that at this point in the Mishnah it seems that they do need absolution. So how do you resolve that? You said at the outset, Ein Nishan Alem, and then you say Im Nishalu, Omar Rav Yehuda Hachi Katoni. So with Rav Yehuda we have a new understanding of the Mishnah, and it's to be understood thusly: V'chulon Ein Tzrichim She'ela. All of the vows that were featured in the Mishnah don't need any absolution. That is when you're dealing with a Torah scholar. It's very out of character for a Torah scholar to vow. And if he vows, it's something that's very happenstance, very unusual and very much in passing. And therefore, there's no fear that if he does this, if he utters this type of vow, that he'll continue to be loose with vows. However, if an ignoramus approaches us for absolution, we will be stringent with him. The Gemara will elaborate on that momentarily, but we'll deal with him in a strict fashion so that he does not accustom himself to vowing. Bishlamo machmirin. I understand the expression machmirin, delo paschinon le becharota, that we don't make it easy for him to absolve himself from the vow by enabling him simply to express regret. That's an easy way of getting out of it, by simply saying, I regret what I said. There are other methods that require more effort on our part in order for him to extricate himself from the restrictions posed by a vow. But the charota method, simply by expressing regret, that we're not going to allow, that being an illustration of our being machmir. Ela einshin hechi domi. What does it mean that we punish him, that we impose a restriction on him? Kedusanya. In order to answer einshin, so we learn the following brisa, which deals with a Nazirus vow, and then we'll use this as an example, as a precedent for understanding the concept of Unshin Oisai. Misha Nozar, a person accepted upon himself Nazirite status, Viovar al Naziruso, and he violated his Nazirus, Ein Nizkokin Loi, we do not deal with him, we don't absolve him of his Nazirus vow, ad shinoi boi isur kiyomim shinoag bohen heter, divrei Rabbi Yehuda, until he observes a repeat number of days, the number of days that he, let's say, had violated his Nazirus. Let's say he had accepted upon himself Nazirus for X number of days, and during that time he was drinking wine. So he was in violation of his Nazirus. So we will not absolve him, will not release him from Nazirus, unless he observes the restrictions, the abstentions demanded by Nazirus for the number of days that he was lax with his Nazirus. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, that's Rabbi Yehuda's approach. So that if a person had accepted upon himself, let us say for argument's sake, 100 days of Nazirus, and he didn't observe the 100 days, he drank wine during that course of time, Rabbi Yehuda would say, this person is not going to receive absolution from his vow until he observes 100 days of wine restriction. Omer Rabbi Yosi, Bamed v'mamurim b'Nazirus mu'etes. This idea of having to observe the number of days that he had violated is true with regard to a Nazirus who was originally for 30 days. That's mu'etis, meaning the small, the limited amount of Nazirus, amount of time for Nazirus. That's a stam Nazirus. When a person accepts upon him a Nazirite status without qualifying how long it would be, it is observed for 30 days. Avol benazirus meruba dayo shloshim yom. Let us say he had, like in our previous example, accepted upon himself 100 days of nazirus, and he was lax most of the days. According to Rabbi Yossi, we will demand of him to observe a total of 30 nazirus observed days, and then will enable him to absolve himself if so be. So what do we see from here? We see the concept of Oinshin is however number of days he had accepted upon himself the vow and was and until he turned to us, that a certain amount of time lapsed. So we will tell the Am Haaretz, listen, you've got to observe the vow that you made for the number of days until you had come to us to seek absolution. Omar Rav Yosef, Hoyul v'Amri Rabbonan Ein Nizkokim Lo, since the Rabbonan taught that an Amoretz who is, we'll say, lax with his vows, so we don't deal with him. Prior to his observing the, we'll call it the makeup days, Bei Dino de Mizdakaki, based in a court that does cooperate and grant him his request of absolution, Lo Ovid Shapir, that court is not behaving properly. The Rosh adds, Lo Ovid Shapir, Ovid, the Lo Tema, one should not think, Kevan de Chumra Bialmahu, since this is a mere stringency that we're imposing on him, Ovar, Viovad Bey, Lo Garinon Bey, that if the court violates this by not insisting on the restriction days, so we wouldn't express our disapproval. Komashmon de Garinon Bey, we are told here in the Gemara that we shall express our disapproval, express our anger. Vamrinon Le de Lav Shapir Ovid. However, after expressing our dissatisfaction, however, we do not impose any form of excommunication. That's one approach. Now, Rav Acho Bar Yaakov is the second approach we see in the Gemara. Omer Mishamtinon Le. A Beis Din like that would be subject to Shamta. Shamta is a form of excommunication. Whereas Rebbe Meir was restrictive, the Chachomim say we enable him to absolve himself from the vow and we teach him not to be lax with these areas. Now, we have a Tanaic source in which you see a series of house markings on the side under the Nosei Mivne heading. We indicate Hanhogis Rois. You'll see in areas where bad practice is featured, and the dashed underline highlights the results of these negative forms of behavior. Tonali Oilum al Tirogil Benador, a person should not accustom himself to vowing Shesaifcha Limoil Bishvus or Benadorim. If a person is lax, is constantly vowing, he'll find that at the end of at some time he's gonna come out to be moil, to be in violation of the vow. Vial Tihirogil Eitzel Amoretz, a person should not accustom himself to being in the company of ignoramuses, shesayfcha lahachil chotvolim. At the end of the day, he's end up feeding you untithed produce. And eating tevel carries with it a very serious penalty. Halti regulates al kain amoretz. A person should not keep company with a kain who is an ignoramus. Shesayfcha lahachil chot truma. Some yourselves have truma tamea. He is going to come to feed you truma. If you say truma tamea, defiled truma, which of course is forbidden to consume. The al tarbesicha imoisha, person should not accustom himself to discussions, to talking beyond the absolute minimum with women. Shesoifcho lovo lide niuf, people who are free speakers, who talk freely with women, will eventually come to acts of immorality. Rabbi Achab, Rabbi Yoshia, Omer, kol at soifa benoshim, soifo bo lidei avera. He who gazes upon women will eventually come to conducting intimacy in a forbidden context. V'chol mistaka ba kevo shel isha. Now here, the Gemara speaks in euphemistic terms. We'll translate and then offer a little further explanation. anyone who gazes upon. Now, literally, it gave me the heel of a woman. The Gemara will explain what that really means. But the result is Hafion Loi Bonim She'enom Muhuganim. The result would be children that are not proper. Now, improper children, that has broad implications, but we'll leave it at that, at the translation level. Omer of Yosef uve ishto nida. This warning not to gaze upon Akeva Shalisha means even his own wife, when she is nida, the menstrual period, during which time one's own wife is forbidden to the husband. Omer b'shimin lokish akeva dekotoni. When it speaks about the akeva, the heel, it's a euphemism. B'mokom hatinoifes. It's a reference to the woman's actual gender area. Shehu mechuvon keneged ha'akev. Anatomically speaking, that part of the body is above the person's, or in this case, the woman's heel. As we go on in the Gemara, I want to point out, and maybe by way of disclaimer, mention that from here till the end of the Perek, which was end of today's shir, is the Gemara deals with areas that demand modesty, especially in the context of a Gemara markings Daf Yomi Shir, which we present to the public. There are areas that one should be cautious, exercise modesty, realizing that we're dealing with matters of intimacy, and that really does demand modesty, and certainly in a public setting, and also on a private level as well. So bearing with that in mind, you realize we're going to be dealing with the general topic of husband-wife relations, intimacy, and how one should conduct himself and practices that one should avoid. Tanya. We have a posuk that appears in the context of the receiving of the Torah, the Maimed Har Sinai, and it says, Bavur tie yirosoi al penechem. That the giving of the Torah is associated with a people that understand what it means to be God-fearing. And what does the term al penechem mean? Zubusha. This has to do with the characteristic or the midah, the quality of embarrassment. I mean, a person who is capable of becoming embarrassed, who has a sense of, who's capable of experiencing shame. Levilti sechato malamed. This pasuk teaches us shabusha mevia lidei yiras cheda. The person who is capable of embarrassment or of experiencing shame, this leads to being God-fearing or fearing of sin. Mikan Omru, from here we establish Simin Yofe Ba'odam. It's a good sign in a person, Shehu Baishan, that he is a Baishan, that he is a person who is capable of being embarrassed. Acherim Oimrim, Kol Odom Hamizbayesh. Any person who is capable of experiencing embarrassment, lo b'mehira hu chote, he won't be too swift to committing a sin. U'misha'ein lo boishes ponim, someone who doesn't experience this, he lacks the sense of shame. V'yodua shelo omdu avoisav al har Sinai. This is a sign, let it be known, or this demonstrates that his forebearers were not standing at Mount Sinai. They were not those that received the Torah. Just as we explained before, that the receipt of the Torah was by a people that had this quality of shamefacedness. Person who's capable of experiencing shame, So that acts as a deterrent to committing sins. And as we mentioned before, we're talking primarily in the context of matters that demand morality. A person who is capable of shame would be, as we say, deterred to committing an act of immorality. For if he does, you know, he could be exposed and experience great shame, and it would be very difficult for him to shrug it off because he is a Baishan. Omar Rabbi Yochanan ben Davoy. This name is worth noting for the Gemara later on. Daf on Omid Beis will be citing what he says. Now he says, "Arba Dvarim Sochu Li Malachei Ashores." There are four things that were taught to me, that were communicated to me by the Malachei Ashores. What Malachei Ashores refers to, we will see later. On the simple level, it means by the service angels. However, we don't guarantee that is going to be the final explanation of that term. So what were the four things that were taught to him by the Malachei Ashores? We have a marking to highlight each one of these. On the side, you can see we have a Nosei Mivne heading. These are Arba Mumin Banoshim Uma She Gor Mom. Four defects that could arise in people, we'll say physical defects that can arise, and what the cause of it. And we're dealing on a spiritual level, and in the Gemara, as is the Gemara, there is constant interface between the realm of spirituality and the realm of the physical. They are intertwined. The spirit, the realm of the spirit, can have an influence on the realm of the physical. So the Gemara continues. Chigrin mipnei mahavion. Chigrin has to do with lameness. And we'll say it's a foot or leg related deficiency. From what does it arise? Answer: mipnei shehoifchim es shulchanam. We're dealing here with a euphemism. In the words of Rashi, we're dealing again with the realm of intimacy. Shehoifchim, Rashi says, ponim keneged oirev shebo'im an shesem shelo kedarkon. They conduct their intimacy in the, we'll call it the unusual fashion. Ponim means the face. Keneged oirev means approaching from the back. Without elaborating any further, that's how Rashi describes it. You notice how the Gemara language is very careful. It uses a euphemism, and the translation of the Gemara is chigrin. Lameness happens as a result of people turning their tables over. Ilmim mitnei mahavion, muteness, lack of speech. Where does that come from? Mitnei shemenashkim al oisamokom, because there is a menashim, a kiss. They kiss that part of the anatomy that we're dealing with right now. And that's not, according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Davoy, that is not to be done. And that's what he was taught by the Malachei Ashores. Chershim mipnei mahavion. Chershim has to do with deafness. What does it come from? Mipnei shemisaprin bishas tashmish. Misaprin means they talk, they gab at the time of intimacy. Rashi says, I should say, the Tosfos at the very bottom says, Sheishlam l'shamish betznea. This is we'll call it a violation of modesty. The intimacy should be done in a modest fashion. Mashmim kulam, and they, this kind of couple, they do so with in an audible fashion. L'chein l'kach nasim havlodos chershim. You see, measure for measure, because they were behaving in an audible fashion, so their offspring become in they lack the audio sense, namely they do not hear. The Gemara continues, sumin mipnei mahavion, blindness. What is the cause of that? That they shemistaklim ba'oisoi mokoim, because they gaze upon that part of the anatomy that demands a sense of modesty. Gemara raises a problem, a question. Verominhu. We raise an objection to what was said here, and we'll be more specific when we get on in the Gemara, but from one of the points that we just saw here is going to be challenged. Shalu asima shalom. There's some girsos that here, Devisu de Rabbi Elazar. Ima shalom is the name of a woman, the wife of the great Tana Rabbi Eliezer. So she was asked, Mipnei ma, and we continue at the top of Amud Beis, Bonayich Yefefian Biyoser. What caused your children to be exceptionally handsome, exceptionally beautiful? Amra Lohen, so she says, regarding her husband, she describes their intimate life. Eino Misaper Imi. Now the word Misaper here is a euphemism. It means intimacy. He doesn't conduct intimacy with me. Lo betchilas halayla v'lo besof halayla, not at the beginning of the evening, nor at the end of the night in the early morning. Ella b'chatzos halayla, only at midnight, at that time in the middle of the night. Then he conducts intimacy with me. If you notice in the Meforshim, the Ran at the top says v'lo b'tchilas halayla v'yach b'sof halayla, likewise the end of the night. Noshim halchus b'shuk, women are walking outdoors. V'yitain daito aleim, and at that time he might think about other women other than his wife. And as we go on in the Gemara, and particularly when you look in the commentaries here, this is a major preoccupation of the sages, that during intimacy a man is supposed to be totally focused on his wife. And in the case of, we'll see later on in the Gemara, in the case of a bigamous relationship, the man has two wives, he must have his mind on the specific wife with whom he is conducting the intimacy. And that is an exceptionally important consideration. That Reb Elazar, he was afraid that if he were to have intimacy at a time of day, at the time of evening, when women, I'm adding now an element of my own understanding here, is when women might be heard outdoors. They're walking in the early evening and at the early morning, break of dawn. Women are outdoors, and I'm adding, as I said, my own interpretation. He might hear their voices, and that would cause him to lose his, let's say, his focus on his own wife, and that is a problem. So she says that he had a very specific time for the intimacy, ukshu misaper, and furthermore, when he did conduct intimacy, megale tefach umechase tefach. Here we're going to just leave it at a literal translation level. There's more that needs to be looked into regarding this, but it means he would reveal, expose, just do a physical exposure, expose a tefach, a small part of one's body, and mechase tefach, and then cover it up. The Rosh says Kadesh Teira Yirav Ubusha Alponov. This type of behavior would increase the modesty element of it, an element of fear and embarrassment. Inami Shle Enemikyu of Bosser, or that he would be distancing himself from too much, physical pleasure. The Gemara continues, V'doime olav kemisha kof oy shade, and the intensity with which he conducted the intimacy was such that it was like a person who was overcome by a demonic force. Rashi has two pshatim number on the third line from the top. One is shebola b'koyach v'doime kemisha shade kofo. He came on with a certain amount of strength, with force, as if a demon had overtaken him. V'is the amri shemiskase kulo karam shemefached minashade. Another explanation is one of modesty, that was completely covered, like a person who would be afraid of a shade. The amarti lo, and I asked him, says Ima Sholom, I asked my husband, matam, why do you behave this way? So he answered, all of my behavior here is in order for me to be totally concentrated on you and not think about another woman, and because thoughts like that would be, again, on a spiritual level, would be that the children that would result from a union, even though it's a husband and wife, but with his mind on other women, would be tantamount to producing illegitimate children. From this discussion, we see that his behavior was we mentioned Rashi's pshat before, but I think that in order to appreciate this, the question that the Gemara is raising, we saw on the top line and on the third line also this idea of misaper imi. Misaper would mean as well, we mentioned it had to do with intimacy, but it also has to do with, on the simple level, he was speaking with her. He conducted speech, spoke and conversed with her at midnight when he had the intimacy. So what do we see from here? We see from here that there was talking. And on Omid Aleph, if you use your arrows, you can see on Omid Aleph, we saw that Mesaprim B'Shas Tashmish was a negative thing. It led to deafness, to Chirshus. And here we see that he was Mesaper, he did conduct conversation with her at Chatzos HaLaila, when they had their intimacy. The Gemara says, Lo Kashya. There isn't a contradiction. Ha B'Mili D'Tashmish, Ha B'Mili Achrinaisa. If the conversation between husband and wife is focused on the actual act of intimacy, in order to appease her, to create more, let's say, conviviality between the couple, so that is allowed. The form of speech of or topic of speech to which we express our objections, that's mili achnaisa, other matters, things unrelated to what they are right now involved with. A long point is now made. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, zu divrei Rabbi Yochanan ben Davoi. We emphasized his name earlier. What he said is what he said, but that's his opinion. Avul omru chachomim ein halacha ker Yochanan ben Davoi. We're not bound by Yochanan ben Davoi's restrictions. Elo kol ma she'odom roitzelasus b'ishta oise. Whatever a person wants to do with his wife, he is allowed to do. Moshal lebosar. We highlight with a diamond two expressions: bosar and dag, fish. Of meat and fish that the Gemara uses as an example. I know that we've emphasized this, maybe we're overemphasizing it, but we're dealing with matters of extreme modesty, and one should not leave this topic with the Gemara understanding alone. This topic demands further study, look into the Mishnah Brura, and and into other sforum that deal with these topics, but here we're right now dealing with the Gemara. The matter of intimacy can be compared to bosser. A person buys habomi beis hatavoch. A person buys meat from the butcher. Rotzeh lo'ochlo, and then he wants to eat it. Bemelach ochlo, tzli ochlo, mevush ochlo. He might choose to eat it with salt. He might choose to roast it. He might choose to cook it. Sholok ochlo, another form of cooking. And v'chein dag habomi beis hatzayed. Likewise, likewise with regard to fish that a person buys from the fisherman, the trapsman. Any way he likes to prepare it, he has a right to prepare it. And that approach is quite more liberal, quite more open than the approach, the restrictive approach that Rabbi Yochanan ben Davoi had expressed at the bottom of Chof Omer Aleph. And hence Rabbi Yochanan takes a stand that the restrictions that were cited was Rabbi Yochanan ben Davoi's opinion, but the Chachamim don't rule like that. Omar Amemar, Man Malache Hashores. You can use the star that we have to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text and look back to Omid Aleph, as the star indicates. And in that section of the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan ben Davoi said four things were told him by the Malache Hashores. Here the Gemara asks, who are the Malache Hashores? The answer is Rabbonon. It's a reference to the scholars. Rabbi Yochanan ben Davoi was taught four things by the scholars. If one were to think that you're dealing with actual service angels, why would Rabbi Yochanan have said just a few lines above that, well, we don't rule like Yochanan ben Davoi? Oh, but everything Yochanan ben Davoi said was told him by service angels. Inhu b'ki b'tzura savlat fei. Wouldn't one assume that a service angel is all the more expert in what causes the formation and deficiencies in a child's development? So if Rabbi Yochanan can, we'll say, dismiss Rabbi Yochanan ben Davoi, he's dismissing an opinion that was developed not through service angels, but through rabbis. And so some rabbis feel that way, and Rabbi Yochanan says other rabbis disagree and feel that speech during intimacy or the other matters that were featured there. We saw Hoifchenes Shulchanam. Those things do not result in the deformity of children. So we have a legitimate machlokas. And we can say that only if you explain that Malachi Ashores does not mean service angels. Vamai Korulu Malachi Ashores, why are the Rabbonon, why are the scholars, the Torah scholars, referred to as service angels? Answer, the Metzaini Kemalachi Ashores. There are different explanations as to what this expression means. The starred note tells you to look at Rashi and Maseches Kiddushin, that describes the Rabbonon as being dressed in, if I'm not mistaken, in white, in garb that would remind one of what a service angel would look like. The Rashi here says the Mitzaini Shatufin Betzitzis, Mitzaini having to do with being wrapped in tzitzis, in a garment with tzitzis on it. The Ran, though, has a different approach, an approach that you'll find also in the Rosh. So we look at the Ran in the upper part of the narrow lines, the Mitzani Malshe Shores, Shehein Mitzuyonim V'Nivdolim, they are separate, Mish'ar B'nei Adam. Torah scholars do not mingle amongst the masses. They're separate, Kemalachi Ashores, like service angels. Kenamrinan Ba'agodah, as we say in the Haggadah of Pesach, the Jewish people in Mitzrayim were separate. They didn't intermarry, they didn't intermingle with the Egyptian common folk. If you study the Chumash, you'll see that Yosef has set his brothers up in Eretz Goshen, a separate part of Egypt. On the side of the Gemara, in introducing the new markings, you see a triangle and double underline. The Gemara here will feature Shnei Maisim Im Noshim Shebo Lefnei Rabbonim, two incidents where women come to rabbis in Tamia with concern, with wonder, Al Hanhogas Baleim, concerning their husband's behavior with them. Once again, within these matters. The Gemara, the triangle, Hahi Dasoy Lekame de Rebbe, a woman came with a complaint to Rebbe. Omra Lo, Rebbe, she says to Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi, she says, Arachti Loi Shulchan V'Havcho. Now, this expression of the Shulchan Hafuch, we saw on Omid Aleph, we saw four lines from the bottom at the end of the line, they Shahoifchene Shulchanam. And we explained over there was Pinogit Ponim Keneged Oref. So she says that I set myself up, I set the table, and he inverted it, as we explained before. Omar Lo, so Rebbe says, if you find that questionable, there is no problem in your husband's behavior. B.T. Torah itiroscho vani ma'aselech. The Torah allows him as he conducted himself, and there's nothing I can do for you. The Ran quotes a pasuk, HaTorah hetiroscho dichtiv. The pasuk says, Ki kach ish isha, shi lekucha lo, lasos bo kol cheftzo. Let's continue in the Gemara. Hahid asoi lekamei derav. A woman came to Rav, Omar lo, and she said to him, Rebbe, arachti lo shulchan v'afchoi. Omar, Rav said, my shno min binisa, what's different between you and the case we saw above? We have a star, when there's a diamond above, with binisa is the fish. As we explained above, your husband has rights. Now, we might just mention parenthetically that these rights and the husband's powers and all this is all fine and good, but he can't force her. Forcing, she would have to cooperate, and we'll assume that in these discussions the woman cooperates, but finds it like unusual in her eyes, and that's why she came with the problem. But let's say forced intimacy, that we'll see objections to that later as we go on in the Gemara. Now we continue. Velo, the pasuk says, Velo sosu achrei levavachem. Mikan Omar Rebbe, from this pasuk, which says that thou shalt not follow your hearts, Rebbe concludes, Al yishta odem b'koizeh. Again, we're using euphemisms. A person should not drink this cup, v'itein enof b'koizacher, and in the meantime, be looking at another cup. We mentioned this before, that during intimacy, we're very concerned that a man thinks exclusively about his wife and not someone else. Omar Ravino, lo nitzucha elo dafilu shtei enosh. Of this restriction of al yishtadon b'kezev itein eino b'kezacher applies even to a man that has two wives. He's not thinking about other women, strange women. Even if he's thinking about, while having intimacy with wife number one, he's thinking about wife number two, we're taught not to behave thusly. This is, of course, Judaism. You could say Judaism reaching its heights, how halacha is involved with every aspect of the human experience, even this area, which is of great modesty, as we've indicated, we're dealing with intimate matters. And notice that the halacha has expectations of us, even the mental level, the thinking level. This is a very refined area. Some people might react to how in the world can the one's thoughts be dictated? And we answer yes. If you look in the Sefer Achinuch on the topic of the Aseres Hadibro, specifically Lo Sachmod, where the Torah warns against coveting other people's possessions, the Torah is in fact governing how one even is to think. And ultimately, one should realize that the Torah is interested in our own personal maximum benefit, maximum pleasure. So let us simply work with the assumption that for a truly fulfilling lifestyle, the Torah is not to be viewed, it would be a mistake, let us say, to view the Torah as some type of dictatorial effort on the part of the Ribbono Shalom to restrict our lives into some type of straitjacket. Quite the contrary. By living this lifestyle, one will actually reach maximum benefit, maximum pleasure with his family life. We continue in the Gemara. Uvaroisi mikem hamordim va'poishim bi. The Ran refers to this pasuk, the word, I should say, in addition to the Ran, we also find the Rosh commentary says Baros Loshem Breira, choosing out, a separation, and I will separate from you the rebellious ones. Those are the Mordim and Poshimbi, and the rebellious ones and the sinners. Who is being referred to over here? Omar Rebbe Levi, Elu B'nei Teisha Midos. These are people who are, well, literally the children of the nine attributes. These are negative things. B'nei Osnas Meshagarach. It's an abbreviation, expression for the upcoming list of people. B'nei Emo, B'nei Anusa, B'nei Snua, B'nei Nidui, B'nei Tmura, B'nei Mriva, B'nei Shichrus, B'nei Grushas Halev, B'nei Irbuvia, B'nei Chatsufa. Now, in our Mark and Morris, you might notice that we numbered up till 10. The Meforshim, though, explain that really two of the examples here are combined into one. Hence, we're really counting nine. What are these people? Who are they? So these are people, so we'll call children, of a couple, B'nai Amal, for example, Amal, having to do with fear, where a man cast fear upon his wife, threatening her, and the result was intimacy against her will. And the result of that is children that are improper, bonav, that are not hagunim, because he dealt with his wife in this unacceptable fashion. The result, measure for measure, are children that are, we'll say, unacceptable. That's the B'nai Emo. B'nai Anusa, and here the Ran points out, Anusa, that literally, in words, in other areas of halacha, it's a reference to rape. But as the Ran says, this is a situation that's worse than B'nai Emo. Here, he actually forces his wife into intimacy. And since the two are similar to one another, B'nai Emo and B'nai Anusa, so that's why they're really counted as one when tallying up all the numbers. You'll notice in our Gemara markings, we put a little parentheses around the number two, which we didn't do with any of the other numbers, indicating that the two here is a little different. It's really included together with one. The B'nai Snua is a situation where a man hates his wife. He has intimacy with her, but as a result of that emotional state, he's thinking about another woman. And that's, of course, we're working along with the Ran in his commentary on these different people. B'nai Nidui, the case here is a man has relations with his wife when one of them has been excommunicated, and the Rosh is a little more elaborate than the Ran and says that whether he or she have been menuda, they are osur in tashmish hamita. Number five, B'nai Tmura. This is a case of a man who has relations with one of his wives, and he thinks it is the other one. B'nai Mariva. Mariva's argument. Rashi, the Ran adds, he doesn't really hate his wife, but he had an argument with her just before the intimacy. So he's having intimacy with her while feeling a sense of, we'll say, strain with her. B'nai Shichrus, a man who has intimacy while intoxicated. He's not thinking about his wife. B'nei Grushas Halev, this is a person who has resolved in his heart, he's resolved to divorce his wife. And in the meantime, before he actually divorces her, he has intimacy with her. And B'nei Irbuvya, the Ran and the Rosh have different explanations. The Rosh explains that here a man has a number of wives, and he doesn't know with whom he is having relations. This is similar to the B'nai Tumura that we spoke about above, but it's apparently sufficiently different for us to note it as a separate example. There are other commentaries on this topic, and the Rashi quotes three different interpretations. You can look there for more on that. Number 10, B'nai Chatsufa. These are children that result from a woman who openly had the nerve or the boldness to seek intimacy with her husband in an explicit fashion. Rashi said, the Ran says, Shemiza Panelia is Toivosai Bepesh, she seeks him out in an open way. The Gemara asks, is that so bad for a wife to seek out intimacy with her husband? Aini, this is a long question. V'omar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmeni, Omar Rabbi Yonasan, kol adam she'ishtei tevasei avin lebonim, she'afil b'der shel Moshe Rabbeinu lo hayu kamoi sam, a woman who seeks out her husband. Tevasei means she collects or she draws intimacy from her husband. Well, a woman that does that will merit having children that even in the generation of Moshe Rabbeinu, the likes of which were not found. Shenemar, in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, it's the Almighty says, "Havu lachem anoshim chachamu menavoinim." In terms of appointing for leadership, it was requested that men of wisdom and understanding, chachomim unavoinim, two attributes of wisdom, should be appointed. Uksiv, and then it says, v'alkach es rosh shivtechem, when Moshe Rabbeinu actually gathered together the men of leadership, it says, I gathered the heads of the tribes, v'loksiv nevoinim, and it doesn't say that he gathered nevoinim, people of understanding. In other words, that level of wisdom apparently was not to be found. Uksiv, and it says in the context of Yisachar. Yisachar was a son of Leah, and Leah the wife of Yaakov Avinu, and it says in the pasuk, Yisachar chamor gorem. We'll translate this in the context of the Gemara. Yisachar was caused by the donkey. The donkey led Yaakov Avinu to have intimacy with Leah, which was, we'll just say, was it wasn't the anticipated or the expected intimacy of that particular night with regard to Yaakov. So it was something that resulted from Leah seeking him out, seeking out her husband. And in her seeking out the husband, so the chamor on which Yaakov was riding veered unto her tent. Uksiv, and it says regarding Yisachar, mibnei Yisachar yodei bina li'itim. From Yisachar there came forth bina, yodei bina, people that had depth of understanding. So what we're to learn from this story, from this description of Yisachar, who came as a result of Leah seeking out her husband. So why did you say before that Toiva B'peh is called B'nei Chatsufa, and the Pasuk of Vrotsi Mikem Amor Devoshabi was referring to people like that, when they're actually children that result from a woman seeking out her husband? It's quite praiseworthy. The Gemara answers, Ahi Demartzi Artsuyei. the idea of a wife seeking out her husband, if she does it in a, say, in a hinting fashion, she speaks, let's say, around the topic in such a way that he understands that she wants to have intimacy with him, that's praiseworthy. However, the open, unabashed, direct request of a wife in seeking the husband's intimacy, that is what we referred to before as the b'nei chatzufa, something that a woman should avoid. She should learn the skill of husband-wife communications in a way that she can express her desires, but in a modest, in a, we'll say, roundabout fashion, which, as we see in the Gemara, results in Bnei Yisachar Yodei Bino Le'itim. As you can see, we've reached the end of the Perek, and we're practically at the end of the Daf, so this would be a convenient pausing point. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.